Hi, this is Viv Sutherland. Welcome to Women's Studies. We have here today, late, but here nonetheless, Dr. Frieda Adler, who has written a remarkable book called Sisters in Crime. And me, of course, I'm Viv Sutherland. And before we get started, I have to make some announcements, because I always forget to make the announcements, and then when the end of the program comes, I remember that I've forgotten to make the announcements. So, the women office workers are holding a hearing on October 15th from 5:30 to 7 at the YWCA on Lexington Avenue and 53rd Street. And if you're interested in attending this hearing, the panelists are going to be Seymour Posner, Werner Kramarski, who is the commissioner of the New York State Division on Human Rights, Arthur Stern, who's with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, George Hopkins, who's director of the Office of Federal Contract Compliance, Judith Laser, who's with the mayor's office, and Ronnie Smith, who is also with the New York State Division of Human Rights. And if you feel that you have been treated badly by an employer, be it federal, state, city, or private, we urge you to attend this hearing and state your case. Women Office Workers is located at 600 Lexington Avenue, and I believe you can call them for more information, although they don't give a number on this flyer. The other announcement I have, well, there's two of them. The first is that there's going to be a program on Sagaris and the August 7th Survival Community, a documentary and analysis produced by Marcia Danab and Helene Schiff. And that's going to be on October 19th, Sunday at 3. And the other announcement I have is you should all tune in tomorrow at 10 p.m. for the last in our four-part series on rape, which is going to be pretty important. The rest of the series has been outstanding, and this final program is, I think, a real capstone to the whole series. Now that I've gotten that out of the way, Dr. Adler, how are you?
Thanks for the invitation, Viv.
I'm glad you're here. I find it fortuitous that the program was scheduled months ago. And now there seems to be all this flurry in the news media about women and crime. And I understand you were saying before that your phone is ringing off the hook.
Oh, well, since the last attempted assassination, I've been quite busy with others trying to talk about and figure out why these things are happening now, what are the changes, and discuss them on radio and television. And many people are asking the same question, and that is, why now? Why so many now? Why in one day do we open the Times and see three women on the front page, as a matter of fact? You know, why now? That's the question.
Okay. Why?
I knew you were going to ask that. Well, I think what we're seeing is the social change and the reaction to all of the changes that we've seen happening in the last 10 years, the last 15 years. Perhaps you want to talk about the relationship with female emancipation, and I think there is a relationship. When we talk about the attempted assassinations, for instance, and we chatted about that between the two of us before, I think that these women 10 years ago or 15 years ago, with the same kind of motivation, with the same kind of, if you will, pathology, would have manifested it in some different way. Perhaps they would have killed themselves. That is a suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps a child or a husband. Someone who was near the home. Mm-hmm. Part of their traditional role. And the weapon, perhaps a frying pan, a butcher knife. You know, something accessible to the woman's role of 10 years ago or 15 years. These same women now, with the same motivation, it hasn't changed, are out. They're more in the mainstream. Victims change, perhaps to a president. And weapons change from the butcher knife to a gun. So that motivations can be just the same, but the acting out has become different as women are integrated, incorporated into the mainstream.
Would you hazard a guess as to possible motivation?
Well, I would guess that when you're dealing with these two women, perhaps with underlying, you know, pathology and frustration that we saw evidenced, and the lack of restraint. One of the women, Mrs. Moore, who was on her own and had a life where she seemed to be constantly running, and there were no restraints placed on her, and she was alone and attempting to raise a small child. But it's how these problems were handled. Many years ago, these same women were more protected, more taken care of by husband, by father. And now we have a situation where many women are choosing not to marry. Many women are choosing to be single parents. And it's a difficult one. We can say that for these women who are coming into the mainstream, there's a lot of stress and strain and frustration that men have been subjected to for many years. And I think that's why the female crime rate is going up. That's one of the reasons that as these women become more subjected to all of the problems, it's not easy out there in the pressure cooker, and we know it. And as they become subjected to the problems, many of them turn to deviant behavior, maybe to feed their families, maybe to get a little bit of extra, for all kinds of reasons, for frustrations. Some turn to drugs, some turn to drinking, to alcohol, some turn to other kinds of things like bank robbery and the types of activities that we're seeing on the rise. You know, female crime is changing, whereas the female used to be the prostitute or the shoplifter. You know, they were the feminine crimes of old. Now we're seeing a great increase in bank robbery, auto theft, embezzlement, arson, assault. These are crimes that for years have been in the male domain. And now, of course, another one has been added, assassin.
Mm-hmm.
there was a time, very recently, as a matter of fact, when the profile of the assassin was male, young, you know all the criteria. But now we have to add to that female, because just as she is taking on new roles, healthy roles, I might add, just as she is becoming an airline pilot, just as she's becoming a postal clerk, a telephone lineman, a commercial pilot, all of these roles that are very healthy for the female, so too is she taking on some of the deviant, the deviant behaviors, the deviant roles, one of them being the assassin.
Mm-hmm. Do you... There were a couple of quotes in your book that I really picked up on because I was impressed. And if I can find them in here without...
Well, I've tried to document the change. You know that women went from being 5% of the national arrest rate in early 1960s to being 15% of the total national arrest rate now.
Mm-hmm.
And they've changed not only the numbers, but, as I just said, the forms of the crime. When you consider that armed robbery is increasing three times faster among the rate is increasing three times faster among women than it is among men. When you consider that aggravated assault for young girls under 18
mm-hmm.
is just, the rate is increasing rapidly, much faster than among our young boys. All of these changes associated with the new female. And I might add that one of the problems, and you will probably want some discussion on this, is the increasing opportunity
mm-hmm.
that has opened up for the female. And I don't say this in the sense that, okay, women, back to the kitchen, back to the home, look what opportunities have done.
Mm-hmm.
Not only have opportunities opened up legitimately for females, but it's common sense. It's natural
mm-hmm.
that an offshoot, a byproduct, a darker side would be these deviant behaviors. In other words, 10 years ago, the shopper, if she wanted to quickly add to the family income, she could go to the grocery store and pick up a little bit extra. So shopper becomes shoplifter.
Mm-hmm.
The same woman now perhaps is in industry or working in a bank as a teller.
Mm-hmm.
She has the opportunity to become an embezzler. She was not in a position years ago to become involved in certain types of crimes. We didn't see women as part of bar fights or brawls
mm-hmm.
because they used to go in the back. I don't know that you remember in the ladies' entrance of the
right,
bar.
Right.
So that as these opportunities open up, you know, most of them legitimate, and let me make that quite clear. It's healthy advancement and good legitimate opportunities coming up.
Right.
But there has to be a darker side.
Yeah.
As any group comes into the mainstream, has more opportunities open, they're going to be, you know, take our young girls, they're going to be out later at night,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be in places where there's more opportunity for deviant behavior, they're going to be able to buy weapons. I mean, when did women carry guns? When did girls carry guns?
Right.
This is a change.
Right.
The weapon, the offense carrying a concealed deadly weapon has gone up. You know, a gun does not seem like a female weapon. We're not used to that.
Mm.
So that she has really made an about turn in her criminal behavior, but it shouldn't surprise anyone that this would happen.
What impressed me most about your book and what I suspect made many, many people angry about your book is that, and I also suspect that these were not traditionalists who were angry, but also many radical, put that in quotes, please, radical feminists angry, is that you take what I consider to be a very healthy attitude, which is that women are people. They're not perfect. They're not infallible. Just because women have been socialized to be good and kind and warm and loving doesn't mean that women can't also be mean and nasty and hungry and greedy and so forth and so on. And you see it as a natural outgrowth of liberation, that women should finally start to relax and give vent to things that have been there all along.
Well, we are dealing, first of all, with change in the way women are, what women are taught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of those things that you talked about, that was culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, innately, in the genes, there's nothing more passive about a female. There's nothing more honest inside
right.
the female than the male.
Right.
And we should understand that, just as you said, we are dealing with cultural change. And whereas we used to tell our young girls that the traits that she should admire were to be chaste, to be docile,
mm-hmm.
to be sweet, to back off.
Mm-hmm.
As someone said to me yesterday, that when she's in a feared situation, her hands become perspire and she sweats. She's still nervous. You know, she's from the old school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she doesn't come up front and talk about it. She just backs off. Well, that was female.
Mm-hmm.
15 years ago,
sure.
A female should react like that. But now we are doing something else. We are telling our young girls to be assertive. You know, whether it's scholastically or economically or politically or any other way, to play football. HEW has now handed down federal guidelines saying that boys and girls have to be in the same gym classes together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are pushing competition. We are telling young girls to compete. That's very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But we are also changing the cultural attitude. We are not only changing their milieu, changing their surroundings, we are also changing their attitudes. Now, you can call it assertive.
Mm-hmm.
That's healthy, to mm-hmm. be assertive. But when you say aggression, now that seems like something else.
Right.
And I think that the public is willing to accept assertiveness now, and in many respects still unwilling to admit that as part of assertiveness, there is going to be some aggressive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You really cannot separate that. You can't say assert, and join the service academy,
mm-hmm.
you know, join the army,
mm-hmm.
join the navy,
mm-hmm.
and not expect that there will be aggressive behaviors.
Right.
And so we are seeing more aggressive behaviors on the part of the female. It is cultural change rather than the passive sex, the gentler sex. All of that talk about the gentler sex was something that is a myth. There is really nothing gentler. Women may be smaller,
mm-hmm.
and they may be weaker, but I think that the gun has equalized strength. Another thing I wanted to mention, you started out by talking about feminists and quote radicalized and their feelings about my book, about what I've done. I think this is very interesting. It's interesting to me personally because I have been talked about as an anti-feminist,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that if we put all women back in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
everything will be peaceful again,
mm-hmm.
and quiet.
Right.
Get them off the front page of the New York Times.
Sure it would.
All they have to do is be in the kitchen.
Right.
No more problems.
Uh-huh.
Or back to, things someone said, back to quilt making. Just take them back to the home or chain them in there. And it's interesting because I have also been called a staunch feminist. And this is from the same book. And the staunch feminists, this one comes by way of the fact that some people have said, Dr. Adler doesn't seem to mind if women get ahead, even if it's in crime,
mm-hmm.
as long as they get ahead. And she seems to even delight in the fact that they are getting ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, consider that this is from the same book.
Right.
I am both an anti-feminist and a staunch feminist. And I guess I should make it clear that I'm a scientist. I don't put in the fancy words.
Mm-hmm.
I document.
Right.
And I put down data as I see it. I make curves and trend lines.
Right.
And my predictions are not something from a crystal ball. They are from trend lines. They are from statistics of 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and present day.
Mm-hmm.
I have tried to document social change as a sociologist, and I have tried to talk about women in the criminal justice system as a criminologist, but basically with a scientific neutrality. And it's an objectivity that I have tried to maintain. And I suppose that maybe I have, since I have been called both anti-feminist and feminist, perhaps I have stayed in the middle.
I would consider that to be a given. One, there were a couple things I wanted to comment on and a question I wanted to ask. It seems to me that those women who in the past would take their frustrations and not channel them into aggressive criminal with a slash in between those behavior would end up by turning that sort of feeling and that sort of behavior inward. And what you get then is a lot of women going bananas. I relate this specifically to Phyllis Chesler's book, Women and Madness, and also to some, you know, to some personal experience that I've seen and heard and have happened to me, where if you can't let it out, you turn it inward instead, and you learn to hate yourself. That's just my own comment on it. The second comment I have is that we tried to do a program on aggression last week, and what I was hoping to do was at that point make the link between aggression and assertiveness and sort of lay some sort of groundwork for this. And what happened was we took phone calls and we got a whole string of men who wanted to talk about war, and somehow we never did get onto the subject that I was hoping to pick up. That's 2 points in passing. The question I wanted to ask is, in the beginning of your book, which I was fortunate enough to be able to have the time to read more carefully than the latter part, which I'm afraid I had to rush through, I seem to remember some instances where the people you were interviewing, the women who you interviewed as having performed some sort of criminal behavior, did not seem to share your views on why they did what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you would comment on that.
I suppose that what you're referring to are my comments about female changes in society, mm-hmm. about female emancipation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, as a matter of fact, most of the women in prison know very little about society, societal movements and social change, and many of them are just worried about day-to-day and
mm-hmm.
how to feed their kids. And if you do ask them about women's liberation or women's emancipation, they aren't much concerned. As a matter of fact, they say things to me like, oh, Doc, you mean the bunch of kooks or lesbians. You know, this is the comment that I get from the women. And so they don't accept it. Now, I must say that no one has ever said to me, you know, Dr. Adler, now I'm liberated, I'm going to rob a bank. That has never happened. But, you know, you cannot be part of our society, no matter at what level. And we're talking about the women in prison now, the women who are at the bottom of the pile, the women who are in the lower echelons, the lower strata. Now, when you talk about these women, they may be in the lower socioeconomic strata,
mm-hmm.
but they certainly are part of this society. They certainly know what's going on, and whether or not they attribute their actions to societal changes or broad social problems,
mm-hmm.
they still are affected. They still see what women are doing. They still see movement for equal opportunity. They still turn on the television or the radio every day and hear equal rights for women. They know what ERA is. They know what all of these changes are. They are told what they are supposed to have and can have. Now, maybe these women are not the ones who are saying, we demand equal opportunity in employment, and they're not the ones who are submitting, you know, their problems to various Senate bodies, etc. However, they absolutely know what's going on, and it does come out in a different way. They may say, Doc, I never said I'm liberated, I'll rob a bank. But let me tell you ways that it comes out. I had a case of a girl who robbed a gasoline station with her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. She was the one who went into the gasoline station. He waited in the car. And I said to her, well, what did you say to him, you know, to the male, you know,
right,
to the partner? And she said, well, I did think a little bit about that, and so I wanted to make him feel important, you know, my kismo. And I said, you're a better driver. You know, you wait in the car. You're just better at driving than I am. And then I went in, and I knew, she said, quote, that he didn't have the guts to do the real job. Now, it's these kinds of things that I hear. There was another woman, another incident that was that stands out, and apropos of your question, a woman who also robbed robbed a bank, and the first she told me, as a matter of fact, that she had to support her children, and she thought about prostitution, going into the trade, but that was against her upbringing. Mm-hmm. And then she went to rob a bank, and she went in the first time with an unloaded gun, and then she went in with a loaded gun. And finally, she did succeed in robbing the bank. And she went home, she turned on the radio, and she said, you know, Dr. Adler, I was irate. I was so angry. I said, why? She said, because the radio announcer just said that the local bank had been held up by a man dressed as a woman. Didn't he think a woman could do it? So that you say to me, when you're dealing with the women in prison, they don't know anything about female liberation. Do they agree with the changes that I'm documenting? Mm-hmm. No, they don't understand it in those terms, generally. But it certainly has permeated down. And interestingly enough, now had a meeting at Clinton State Prison in New Jersey. And the women prisoners were telling me that, as a matter of fact, they were very excited about now. And that they were sorry the group had not come back. So that it did have meaning. They were enthusiastic. And I do think that we are dealing with the changes, maybe not consciously, but unconsciously, subconsciously, these women are changing their deviant roles. They don't want to be second-rate or second-class criminals. That's what they tell me. In other words, if they're going to take the risk, why take the risk of, by stealing $10 radios when you can steal color TV sets? This is the message that I get. The risk is there, and they are more and more carrying guns. They are more and more in places where they can perform these. They are just a little bit less suspect, which makes it still a little easier for them, and they're taking advantage of it. But basically, they no longer want to be second-rate criminals. Now, that's not a surprise. Women generally don't want to be second-rate citizens.
Sure.
Now, these women are women just like you and just like I, just plain women. They just are involved in something called criminal behavior or deviant behavior. They may be good wives, mothers, they may even have a job, but they are involved for some reason in some kind of deviant activity. Now, I don't condone that, don't get me wrong, but they are people who have, if you will, their consciousness has changed too. They are women, they are in our society, they are growing up in our society. Look at gang girls.
Sure.
You know what's happened?
Yeah.
You saw the article in the New York Times several months ago about 9 13-year-old girls in Central Park. Do you remember that, when they held up an 80-year-old physician?
Yeah.
And they mugged her and stole from her, and the 80-year-old female physician was in the hospital. I don't really know what happened to her. Probably will never work again. Now, these were 9, 13-year-old girls. So that, you know, when did you hear of all-girl gangs?
Right. Right. Even young girls involved with boys' gangs are starting now to take a more active role. There was a woman just convicted, and I don't remember whether it was here or somewhere else, in another country it might have been even, who was convicted of rape, not because she performed a rape, but because she held the woman who was raped down while her partner did the rape.
Certainly a more aggressive type of behavior.
Yeah.
But, you know, girls were always part of gangs. Mm. They were the auxiliaries years ago and, you know, held the guns and stood as lookouts.
Right.
But these same girls now say that they want to, and I quote, do their own thing, that they don't want to be as dependent on the boys.
Is it true now that police and other law enforcement agencies are still less suspicious of women?
Yes, very definitely. And I think that may have been one of the problems that we saw out in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps
mm-hmm.
The reason that the Secret Service, even though alerted, did not respond to the alert that Sarah Moore had said that she was going to attempt to assassinate the president. I think perhaps the fact that she was a female made a difference, that females were just not suspect as potential assassinators of president, a potential assassin.